brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the Josh and Chuck Electric Freakout featuring Matt.
Guest producer Matt.
Standing in, you may also know it as Stuff You Should Know.
Right, Matt of Lions and Scissors, band fame.
Playing soon.
Killer band.
They have a MySpace page, right, Chuck?
Yes.
Yeah?
We plugged it before.
Yeah.
So we're not going to do it again.
No. Which I think we just did, though, buddy.
That's all right.
Chuck, I don't know if you're paying attention or not, but the United States pretty much dominated the 20th century in every way conceivable.
USA. USA.
Exactly. That was chanted quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Rocky?
Oh, yeah.
Beat the Russian guy.
Yeah, sure.
That was just one accomplishment of many.
Rocky IV? Five.
Rocky IV.
Right.
So, yeah, we successfully fought just about every war we engaged in.
Yeah.
Our economy just thrived. Did you know that the per capita GDP in 1900 for the United States was $4,096?
Not bad.
Not bad. By 1999, it was $9,671. Doesn't seem like that much of an increase.
No, not for
But think about the
time.
Population increase. So actual GDP in 1900 was $28.6 billion.
Wow.
And 1999, it was $9.268 trillion.
Wow.
Yeah, so basically we rocked the hizzy during the 20th century, right? Now it's 2009.
It is.
We're engaged in land wars with insurgent groups in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yes, we are, still.
And I guess you could replace engaged with mired.
Mired.
Maybe. The dollar is being abandoned, or considered being abandoned as the universal currency in favor of a basket of currencies.
Right.
Which is, spells trouble.
A cornucopia.
Yeah, that's another way to put it, buddy. And our housing market caused a worldwide financial collapse.
Yes.
So America's not looking quite as bright and shiny as we used to.
Before we get tons of emails saying it wasn't just that.
It was.
had a lot to do with it.
So this has caused a lot of people to wonder whether the turn of the 21st century was actually the end of the American century.
Right.
You know, especially with the rise of BRIC, Brazil,
sure.
Russia, India, and China. And specifically India and China, their enormous development
right.
has made people think, well, China's the next United States.
Right. Well, I know everyone always thinks that it's hard to not be in the moment and realize that the greatest civilizations always fall at some point.
Sure.
It's going to happen. I mean, it may not be anytime soon, but fast forward 1,000 years and America might be a barren wasteland like the Matrix or something.
Was it a barren wasteland? I don't
remember. Yeah, remember when he showed him on TV and it was this, you know, destroyed. Matt is
Matt's
not
agreeing
in
with you. Yeah,
it's
I'll
like
go
destroyed
with
buildings.
I'll go with the general consensus.
This is
here.
The real world.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. But we'll have our day.
I say I'm with you. I say that the United States century, the American century is not over yet.
I agree.
And the reason why is I think that during the 20th century, the American dream, this idea that everyone has an equal shot at pursuing his or her own goal under the free market capitalist system.
Which is not true, but it's a nice thought.
I think that thought, the American dream, whether it's possible to realize it or not,
right.
was so successfully packaged that it was able to be exported to the rest of the world that
right.
kind of caught on.
Sure.
Have you ever heard of Thomas Friedman's Golden Arches theory of conflict prevention?
Does it have to do with McDonald's?
Yeah.
Then I have heard of it.
So, yeah, the back before, I think, the Balkan War, no two countries that both had a McDonald's engaged in armed conflict against one another.
That's great.
After the point that both of them had the McDonald's.
Yeah.
Until the Balkans.
Because they were pretty stoked about their fries and their Big Macs.
You could say that. You could also say that correlation does not prove causation, but still,
right.
it's pretty interesting, and it makes a good point that
it's a
that
symbol, actually, more than anything.
It is. So, just like a Coke machine. Like, you can
sure.
find Coke machines in the most remote countries, areas of the world.
Right.
And you can say that that's basically you're exporting democracy through successful capitalism, right?
Happy juice.
That's also going on right now, that continued export. With this thing called microlending.
That's the longest setup we've ever done.
Yeah, but dude, it was good.
Yeah, microlending is pretty cool. This is a good article, dude.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
So, Josh, as you know, because you wrote it, microlending doesn't necessarily refer to the size of a loan. It's not necessarily an itty-bitty loan.
It's
although,
not the size of the loan. It's how you use it.
Right. It's that's actually very true.
Thanks.
It refers to the qualifications of the borrower.
Right.
Although it usually is a small loan.
Right. One of the big flaws in that American dream, that capitalist free market system where supposedly everybody has an equal opportunity at obtaining success through
right.
their own hard work,
sure.
is that you usually need startup capital, right?
Right.
Even if you're selling hot dogs on the street,
you got to buy the
you got to buy the cart. You got to buy the dogs.
Like my Bloody Mary stand last year at the golf tournament.
I was not there for that. Well, I wasn't invited, if I remember correctly.
To my front yard?
Yeah.
I had to invest in the...
Oh, yeah. That's the one where the cops came and busted it up,
sure.
right?
I lost all that money that I invested in the
that
Bloody Mary
stinks.
Supplies.
That's what happens when the fuzz turns up.
But startup costs, sure.
Yeah. The thing is where do you go for startup costs? You generally go to a bank. And, well, banks are run by capitalists themselves. They're looking to turn a buck.
Of course.
So...
As they should.
They have certain criteria that people have to meet.
Right.
To be accepted for a loan application, right?
Right.
So the problem is there's huge masses of people, generally the working poor, who are usually excluded from this. They don't have collateral.
Of course not.
They might not have an education to back up this
right.
this entrepreneurial
probably no
spirit.
Credit history or loan history to
right.
begin with.
So they're not meeting the criteria. They can't get the loan, and therefore they can't obtain self-sufficiency through their own hard work.
Or achieve the American dream.
It's a flaw. It's a caveat to that system, right?
Right.
So what microlending does is it kind of fills that gap between these excluded groups
right.
and self-sufficiency.
Right.
By loaning to people who, I put it in the article, that traditional lenders would consider are mindlessly
almost.
Risky.
Yeah.
You know? These loans are mindlessly risky.
Yeah. That's why a dude like Muhammad Yunus is... Deserve the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
Big
yeah.
time.
Yunus is a Bangladeshi economist who founded this microlending institution called the Grameen Bank.
Can I read his quote?
Yeah.
I love it, man. It's inspiring. He said, if banks lent to the rich, I lent to the poor. If banks lent to men, I lent to women. If banks required collateral, my loans were collateral free.
Right.
Here's your Nobel Prize.
He also lent to the illiterate. By not having too much paperwork.
Yeah.
And
poverty, rural areas.
Rural areas where there were no banks. I mean, like, think about how little access you have to startup capital if there's no bank anywhere near you.
Uh-huh.
So he sent people out to these villages to sign people up for loans.
Uh-huh.
And he did it pretty aggressively, but aggressively in the favor of these other people.
Right.
Rather than aggressively...
Trying to make money himself.
Right.
Right.
So he founds Grameen Bank, I think, in the 90s. And it's actually successful.
Yeah. I love the business model. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Just the whole thing you pointed out about that what he counts on to get the loan repaid is almost like honor.
It is. In traditional societies, there's a lot at stake with a good name.
Uh-huh.
And when you borrow money, you're putting your good name on the line.
That's right.
Which is how you got the money in the first place, usually your family name.
Right.
So if you don't repay it, you're basically... You know,
tarnishing
damaging your whole family's image, right?
Yeah.
So
that doesn't go over so well here, I bet.
No, it's...
I bet people
no.
will be like, hey, thanks for the money.
So long, chump. Yeah. So they use social pressure.
Right.
The traditional social pressures that are already in place to ensure loan repayment, right?
Right. Which happens on a weekly basis. Is that correct?
Yeah, people make weekly repayments because it's usually much more affordable.
Yeah. And the bankers on bikes, I love that. These guys ride around on bicycles and visit them, and they give them, you know, their little payment for that week.
Yeah, they're collection agents, and they'll have maybe several in each village or
right.
whatever. So these people are also these people's neighbors.
Right, but they're not like threatening collection agents. That
not
sounds,
necessarily.
Has
I don't
a bad
think
name.
With Grameen Bank it's very threatening.
Right.
But yeah, so imagine a guy who's a collection agent that's also your neighbor who works for a lending right. institution that you borrow from
uh-huh.
showing up at your front door every week
yeah.
in a society where your good name's on the line, you're going to make those repayments.
Yeah.
And it's successful, actually. Not just Grameen Bank, but across the board with microlending in general, they have a 97% rate of repayment, which
that's awesome.
Beats traditional banks.
It's proof that it works.
It is proof that it works,
or
right?
at least 97% of the time.
So let's talk about how it works. The Grameen Bank and other microlending institutions aren't running around and just grabbing, like, you know, Pedro and Shoshana off the street. Those are just two names I came up with.
I could tell you were flailing about searching.
They don't grab them and say, hey, here's some money. Take some money, you know?
Right.
These people actually have to have, you know, business plans or at least ideas of what they're going to use the money
for. These are entrepreneurs
for.
Without exactly. an opportunity, basically.
And so what it is they're funding people in developing countries, which, as I said before, is kind of an extension of the entrepreneurial spirit that the U.S. is founded
right.
on, and it's happening overseas now, right?
Spreading a little bit of that capitalist love worldwide.
Right. Which is love. So, Chuck, like I said, let's talk about how it works. If you wanted to go and make a loan, how would you do this? Would you go to Grameen Bank, fly to Bangladesh,
yeah.
go, here's some money, give right. this to this person?
You need to get a loan to get the plane ticket, though.
Right, yeah.
No, you would go online is one way to do it. And I like the model you use. Well, there's two ways. There's the not-for-profit model and right. the profit model.
Right.
But should we talk about Kiva.com first?
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's the not-for-profit model, correct?
Right.
And basically, you will present your business plan as an applicant from places like Lebanon, Tajikistan, Mali.
All over the place.
All over the place.
And Nicaragua has a lot of people on there.
Yeah, Nicaragua. Yeah. And then there's users on the other end that sign up and actually contribute toward this loan in good faith that you have a 97% chance of getting your money back with no profit attached. But it's a goodwill gesture, and basically people contribute as little as $25 until that loan amount is full.
Right. So it'll be like, you know, somebody's picture.
Yeah.
And then like the name of their business.
Uh-huh.
And then like what their business does.
It's almost like adopting a person in a foreign country.
It's very much like that, actually. And you're kind of adopting their business temporarily,
yeah.
right?
So cool.
So it'll also have a description of what they plan on using that specific loan for, right? So it'll be
right.
like maybe purchasing timber for resale or purchasing agricultural supplies like seed or whatever.
Right.
And it has like a little bar, and it has the loan amount, the total, what they need at the end, and then it'll fill up as people contribute. So a lot of different people can contribute to a single loan, then it reaches 100%. And in a lot of cases, a site like Kiva will use a third-party
yeah, bank
lending institution, like maybe Grameen Bank in Bangladesh, but a local community bank usually
yeah, that's
to actually
necessary.
Issue the loan, right?
Yeah, you can't just send them a check. Because they wouldn't have anything to do, you know.
No, sometimes they do. Sometimes
oh, really?
Some sites actually do issue these loans themselves.
Oh, okay.
But for the most part, they serve as a intermediary between you or I, who's
right.
contributing our money, and
which of
know,
course
the,
we don't do.
The bank, which we could though.
I'm just kidding.
And actually, the cool thing about Kiva is that you can contribute as little as $25.
Yeah, I'm going to sign up for this.
And also, Chuck, they have gift certificates too. So the cool thing about the gift certificate is like, let's say you give a gift certificate to me. And what you've done is you better do this. you've contributed $25 basically in my name
right.
to this whoever's business
right.
in Nicaragua.
Yeah.
And I get the $25 back.
Oh, really? Did I write it off?
The distinction, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
If you do, you're a cheap bastard. the distinction is that you don't get any extra money back.
Well, no, there's no interest return on your investment.
No, there isn't. But these people are paying interest. The average the average interest on a micro loan worldwide is about 31%.
Does that just keep the whole thing afloat? Is that what they use that money for?
Supposedly. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Because there's actually criticism of micro lending.
Yeah, I saw that.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
So that's the not-for-profit one. It's really just a socially responsible investment where you can usually expect to get your full amount back but not any interest.
Right.
Then there's the for-profit model, right?
Yes, like microplace.com.
Yeah, that's pretty much that's on par with Kiva. It's like those are the two big micro-lending
right.
sites.
And this isn't a bad thing because people are trying to make a profit either.
No.
It still works out great. They get their money, and you can get a yield as high as 5%.
Which I was reading an
Not
article,
bad.
And some guy was saying, compare that to CDs.
I know.
You know, you get a CD that's giving you 3% interest, you got a great CD right there.
And a CD doesn't give some poor Bangladeshi a leg up.
No, it doesn't.
For his pedicab business.
Although there are, if you have a 401k and you start looking around, more and more investment banks are creating mutual funds that loan to micro-lenders.
Right.
Like Grameen Bank, that kind of thing.
Right. I have a personal story about this, actually.
I want to hear it, buddy.
You didn't know this, did you?
No.
I worked on I did a voiceover for a friend's documentary he did about the tsunami survivors. And he works for a nonprofit agency, like mm-hmm. missionary work type thing. And I did the narration for it, and one of his one of the guys, he focused on like four different stories.
Yeah.
One of his stories was a guy who had a pedicab, you know, the little bicycle cabs, and he got a microloan, I don't remember who it was from, after the tsunami, to buy a second and third pedicab, and then the money he got from that, he opened a little store, like a little small hut store. But the dude was able to build a house and like restart his family. He lost his whole family. He met another woman and they ended up having kids. And
cool.
Just like the coolest story.
That is a great
story. And I don't think he had to borrow more than like $100 or something, man.
Well, that's a point, actually.
Yeah.
That,
goes a long way.
The $25, I think in the article I compared it to the Peruvian Sole.
Yeah.
So $25 on August 10th, 2009, when I wrote this article, the exchange rate was, I think, 25 U.S. dollars to 73
yeah.
Peruvian soles, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if somebody gets a $1,000 loan, that's almost $3,000 in soles,
mm-hmm.
which that's a ton of cash. You can buy a lot of timber.
Yeah. And pedicabs.
I have a personal story about microlending.
Really?
I borrowed some money from my dad once, and I still have an outstanding balance.
Is that why your leg is broken?
Yeah. Well, my thumb. And that's funny you should bring that up, my friend.
Loan
sharks? That was a great setup.
Yeah.
You may notice that this is actually, it bears a striking resemblance to loan sharking.
Right.
Which still exists in a lot of countries. And actually, I read that microlenders are starting to give loan sharks a run for their money because there is no attendant threat of violence.
Driving them out of business.
And their interest rates are much, much lower.
Yeah. What is it? I looked it up, actually. I couldn't find what a loan shark rate might be.
Oh, often like 1,000%, 300%.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
It just astronomical amounts.
It's unreal.
Yeah. And you will have your legs broken.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't, you know, Muhammad Yunus, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. He's not really into
right.
leg breaking,
right.
I don't think.
Not anymore.
No. And you can tell, look at him. Did you see him in the article? He's got his little Nehru jacket on. And he just
that.
Looks like, you can trust me. I help the poor.
Here's $25. Go build a business.
Yeah. So, yeah, that little amount that you contribute really has a huge effect in the developing world, right?
Right.
So that's pretty much the nuts and bolts of how it works. Like I said, there's mutual funds.
Right. That back these.
Right. And supposedly, it actually does have an impact. A lot of people, as we were saying, that mm-hmm. export of capitalism, of the American dream.
Yeah, I like the tie you made there, or that other people have made that you highlighted.
Well, there's a theory that globalization prevents war.
Yeah.
It hasn't been fully panned out yet. A lot of people thought that the interdependent economies
right.
of the 1920s and 30s would prevent war, and we still had World
sure.
War II. So that's that kind of undermined that. I personally think that we just weren't at the stage of globalization yet that we are now, and
right.
that I think globalization can prevent war just because money trumps ideology any day,
right.
especially if you are in such a position of power
mm-hmm.
that you are commanding armies or economies or nations or whatever.
Right.
You're probably going to go with your economy over ideology,
yeah.
right?
I got another quote from your own article.
Let's hear it.
Well, this kind of backs that. This is what the Nobel Committee said when they awarded Yunus the prize in 06. Lasting peace cannot be achieved unless large population groups find ways in which to break out of poverty. And, dude, that's pretty succinct.
Yeah, a lot of people were surprised when Yunus won the Nobel Prize.
Yeah, but how can you break out of poverty is by getting a microloan, starting your
yeah.
business.
There's another theory that poverty or terrorism is bred by poverty rather than religious ideology or dogma.
I could be down with that.
So yeah,
makes
sense. You go whoa, let's stop this jihad, and maybe we can explore some business opportunities instead.
Like, wouldn't you rather open up a jihad stand
than blow yourself up in the middle of that market?
Right.
Yeah. And if you have a stand in that market, you're not going to want suicide
no.
bombers there. It's bad for business.
Yeah. Sure.
Well,
a lot of people say there's not a lot of evidence, though, right? On the other side of the coin?
Yeah, there's a Yale economist I quote in this saying there we are utterly devoid of evidence.
Right.
And there's some studies that have shown that it doesn't necessarily help. These people may repay it, but there's no follow-through on them actually using the loan for what they say they're going to.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, like, if you suddenly have 3,000 soles...
You blow it on...
yeah, you could easily do that, or you could, you know, pay rent or something like that. There's things come up, you know. How
sure.
much money have you spent that was marked for something more important, but right. you had to deal with something that was an emergency that came up, right?
Or if, you know, someone knows, if your neighbor knows you got a loan and you get robbed or something, I'm sure other things happen.
Mm-hmm. And apparently microlending's still young enough that it requires injections of capital, like these lending institutions themselves,
right.
to stay afloat.
Yeah,
they themselves aren't
self-sufficient. Right, right.
Which you have to have that self-sufficiency to help other people become self-sufficient.
So yeah.
I think the jury's very much still out. And just the theoretically, it's such a noble idea
mm-hmm.
that I can't imagine it won't be given more and more slack or whatever it needs to continue.
To grow, sure. Yeah, and at a 97% rate, I mean, you can't argue with that.
No. And that 97% rate, though, has actually led to some really despicable plots.
Oh, yeah. The Mexican banks?
Yeah. The Grameen Bank has actually pointed out that this vastly overlooked segment of the population are dependable to repay loans.
Right.
So as a result,
people
some
take advantage.
Banks have come up to create, to issue microloans. But not to help poverty, but to make money.
Right. Specifically lent to the poor, though, still.
Yeah. There's a guy in Mexico who owns the they're kind of like the Walmart of Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember his name, but he's this multi-billionaire business guy. And he said that his father taught him, if you want to make money, sell to the poor.
Right.
Mainly because there's so many of them, right?
Right, right.
So he started his business and made a bunch of money selling to the poor, selling, you know, cheap consumer products through his retail stores. Well, he founded
like
a bank, very much like Walmart. He founded a bank called Banco Azteca.
Right. That's one of two, right, that does this?
Yeah, they are a microlending institution that this guy owns, and they issue these small loans to the poor, the working poor, but at really astronomical interest rates.
Yeah, they drive them further into debt instead of pulling them out of the mire and the muck.
Right, and they're still issuing these loans in these traditional societies that have these social pressures. They also use a lot of micro-lending practices like bankers on bicycles.
Right.
But these guys are the ones who come into your house and write down the serial numbers on all of your stuff.
Right, and so we'll repossess this.
And they do.
Right.
And it's a perversion of microlending.
Right.
It's exploitation.
On the poor, yeah.
Yeah.
At APR is up to 100%, you said? Or more than 100%?
More than 100% sometimes. So if you borrow $1,000, you pay back $2,000.
Right. Plus.
The problem is Banco Azteca specifically lobbied the Mexican government to be exempt from a law that forces lenders to state the terms of their loan, including the interest rate on a loan,
right,
on the loan before they issue it.
Right.
So a person goes up and goes, I want $1,000. The bank issues it, and the person walks away with their $1,000 with no idea how much they actually owe.
Right.
Legally, they don't have to do
kind
that.
Kind of like an arm.
And you could make an argument either way, right?
Right. And it's
who,
not just
who
Mexico,
was responsible
though.
For those arms that you just mentioned? Was it the aggressive predatory lenders?
Right, right.
Was it the people who were greedy and said, wow, I can afford a $600,000 house even though I only make $40,000 a year?
Didn't read the terms of their loan close enough. It's everyone's to blame.
Everyone is to blame, but Muhammad Yunus.
Right. But I did want to point out, it's not just Mexico. We're not picking on Mexico. This is happening in other places, too.
It is happening in other places, and there's a lot of companies that, you know, we're familiar with, like Citigroup,
yeah,
HSBC Holdings, Zurich Financial. And I guarantee you a lot of the people who run those mutual funds that are heavily invested uh-huh. in these micro-lending institutions that are for-profit and exploitative.
Yep.
So I think if you if this has piqued your interest in micro-lending and you want to go on and maybe contribute a few bucks, do a little extra research to find out exactly what the terms are for repayment of those loans, who they're going to, who they're going through.
Right.
And if especially if you're going to do it through a mutual fund or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm going to scrape together $25.
You can do that.
Yeah. I'll scrape together $50, pay $25 to my father, and then give $25 on Kiva.
You only owe your dad $25?
No, but it's something.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. You can find this article, How Microlending Works, and a whole bunch of... We have some really cool economics articles on the site. Did you know that?
We do.
Yes, we do.
You wrote a lot of them.
I did. So did Jay McGrath. She kicked it on money for a while. You can find those by typing in probably economics in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com, which, of course, friends, neighbors, loved ones, leads us to listener mail.
So, Josh, this listener mail is actually very relevant. I saved it for this episode. Our buddy Stefan, who sent us our signs.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, we have people that are actually sending us things now.
It's awesome.
We've gotten some...
beer.
We got beer from a microbrewery in St. Arnold's Brewery in Houston.
Oh, my God, that was good.
It was really, really good.
Yeah.
And we've gotten some little gifts here and there. And, of course, fan art is always coming in. But tangible things have been sent to us, and we're very grateful for that.
I got a Michael Jackson shirt from Ben Ivey that he designed.
Really?
It was cool.
You didn't show me that.
I'll show it to you.
Jerk. So, Stefan, I'm going to go ahead and say his name because he wanted me to. Stefan Bram. He is in Newark, Delaware. And he and his wife are a two-person team and opened up their own small business in January 09 called Alliteration. A-L-L-E-T-T-E-R-A-T-I-O-N.
Nice spelling.
Thank you.
You've forgotten to finish it with alliteration.
Alliteration. And he sent us these signs to go in our studio. It has our studio name, and underneath one of them it says, "Where Twinkies are revered and moonshine is respected," which we thought was great.
Darn too.
And I think his daughter helped him come up with that.
Yeah.
And then the other one says, "Where badass knowledge happens."
Yeah.
And we've got both of these hung up in our studio, and they look awesome. And we just want to thank Stefan and say good luck with your business.
Yeah, big thanks, Stefan and his daughter
and
his wife.
It means a lot to us. And he said that he also wanted us to mention, if we could, that they try to use recycled wood and stuff to make it a more green business. And these signs were actually taken from like a children's bed or something like that.
Poor kids.
That's what he said. I know. Now his daughter's on the floor.
I know. She's so, like, I hope Josh and Chuck are happy.
If you want to support Stefan, he says his website isn't completely finished. You can go to alliteration.etsy.com or email him at info@alliteration.com. That's two L's, two T's. And Stefan's a great guy, and we wish him all the luck in the world.
Yeah.
Quality business.
Well, Chuck, also, you opened this up for me to say this. If you want to send me and Chuck some cool stuff, you can get our information by sending us an email, or you can just say hi, unicorns, torpedo, whatever.
Or go to the website and click on the contact button at the bottom, and it has the address. And you can just send it straight to us.
Yeah, but we won't hear from them then.
They can include a written note, a handwritten note.
Okay.
And a glossy photo.
You know, I still have to give the email here, Chuck.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, whatever. If you want to say hi or whatever, just send an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?